Yes, now for something a bit different. All year, Australian politicians have been steering the country through the incredible dramas and challenges thrown up by fires and border closures and the virus and a very jittery population. So what did they turn to in their time out, when, if they had it? We've invited three politicians to share some of what they have enjoyed reading, watching and listening to, and you just might learn something new at a range of levels, I suggest to you. The ALP's Chris Bowen is the member for McMahon in New South Wales, and he's held portfolios of health, treasury, immigration and tertiary education. Helen Haynes is the member for Indi on the border of Victoria and New South Wales. She was elected in 2019, becoming the first independent federal parliamentarian to succeed another in the same electorate since Federation. And from the Coalition, we have Warren Ench, I'm told on a rather poor line, but we'll give it a go, the member for Leichhardt in Queensland and a special envoy to the Great Barrier Reef, for a very warm welcome to you all.
Thanks very much, Geraldine.
Now, Chris Bowen, I know you've been dying to come on the pick, so I'm going to let you go first. Looking at your list, I see you don't really distinguish between work and play. You've picked all manner of political fare, starting with a book, Left Out, The Inside Story of Labor Under Corbyn. Now, he was a hugely divisive figure, this Englishman, so let me ask, is the book pro or anti-Corbyn?
I think it's fair, Geraldine. It's really a well-informed book. It's the authors, Gabriel Pogrond and Patrick McGuire, have got access to a huge amount of information. They've got access to the WhatsApp groups of the leader's office and comparing notes on what they're all saying about each other at various crises during Corbyn's leadership and the internecine warfares between the office. And there's a spectacular scene where Corbyn decides to sack his chief of staff, but then when the meeting comes, he just can't bring himself to proceed with the sacking, and she leaves with her job intact. And it's sort of compellingly depressing for those of us who are progressives to read. So I do recommend it's in the finest tradition.
Compellingly depressing.
inside baseball politics. It is very, very well written.
And where did you stand on I think I probably can work this out. Where did you stand on Corbyn?
Well, I wouldn't have been a Corbyn voter in a leadership ballot. No, that's right. For me, it's quite depressing that the Conservatives have been in office now for 10 years and yet the Labor Party hasn't been able to really lay a glove despite some open goals. So, but the book is fair. It's not a polemic. It's not a hatchet job by any stretch of the imagination.
And incidentally, is it one for general readers and for Australian readers? I mean, I often find that comparison between Australian Labor and British Labor, UK Labor, is really quite distinct.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I certainly think it's quite accessible. There's one little snippet that Australian readers will find infuriating, where they're considering the slogan for Jeremy Corbyn of its time, and Jeremy Corbyn's advisors think it was a Jacinda Ardern slogan.
There's no reference to
Gough Whitlam whatsoever. So that will infuriate those of us who know about these things. But no, I think it's quite accessible, and I think anybody with a general interest in contemporary politics in Western democracies would find it a very good read indeed.
The ongoing Northern Hemisphere obsession with Jacinda Ardern. It's fascinating. Sure. Now, moving to your podcast picks, they do sound interesting, and you want to recommend one called It Was Said, which focuses on great American public speeches. It's hosted by John Meacham, whom you describe as an old-style Republican. Are there any left?
Well, yeah, John Meacham's an historian, a very accomplished historian. He's written sort of the definitive biographies of Jefferson, George H.W. Bush, and he endorsed Joe Biden in the recent election. It was actually had a speaking role in the Democratic Convention. He's sort of a Southern Republican who just couldn't abide by Trump. But as an historian, he's put together this podcast, which is, as you said, It Was Said, which goes through some of the really powerful contemporary speeches in American history and sort of takes them apart and puts them in context. They go for about 40 minutes. The production values are superb. The one that I found most compelling was Meghan McCain's eulogy of her father, John McCain. Oh. I happened to listen to that on the day that Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, and I actually found it quite moving about what America has lost in terms of that great respect for service and bipartisanship and coming together in moments of great national memory and crisis. For those interested, it's very good listening. There's stuff on Martin Luther King, JFK, Ronald Reagan's farewell address as president.
Was it Robert Kennedy's eulogy to Martin Luther King?
That's right. And Hillary Clinton's women's rights or human rights speech. They're all in there. It's quite contemporary because it's speeches he's got access to the recordings of. So it's not, you know, George Washington's farewell address or anything like that. It's really from the 1960s on. It's excellent listening.
Oh, that sounds very good, I must say. And you're also a fan of a podcast called The Prime Ministers. Now, this originates in the UK, where the office of PM is now 300 years old.
So it's really
a series of profiles of PMs, is it, in a way?
Yeah, so the office of British Prime Minister is 300 years old next April. And Ian Dale, who you might have heard of, who's a long-standing sort of British publisher and commentator on politics, he's edited a book called The Prime Ministers, but he's also produced a podcast where he interviews the people who've written the pen portraits of the 55 prime ministers. And it's not in chronological order, the podcast, so you can dip into Gladstone and Theresa May and Darby and Jim Callaghan, they're ones I've listened to recently. And, you know, look, there's things in there that you'll already know, but there's also things you get reminded of, and there's things that you just won't know. Inevitably, and it also, I guess the benefit is it brings out some of those prime ministers whom we've all forgotten or never heard of, in a way that you wouldn't go and find a book about them, but you'll learn a lot about them.
Very interesting. I want to go back and learn more about Palmerston, having watched The Last Victoria. And Palmerston emerges, you know, I've always found him an interesting character, and of course he and that amazing late life marriage that he had, which was an extremely happy one and a very productive one. I thought, back and learn about that.
I don't think Palmerston edition is out yet, but, you know, for example, Gladstone, they talk about whether all the Irish troubles of the 20th century could have been avoided if he'd got his way with home rule. It's just really interesting stuff.
Do you have a favourite prime minister in British history, by the way?
Oh, that's a good question. Winston Churchill, obviously. I mean, in terms of how he commanded the English language and turned the war around. But a lot of sympathy for people like Jim Callaghan, who were up against the tide and, you know, was a very decent man, man of his time, and the only person
who've held a sad Labour story, that though, Chris.
Yeah. Mm. But, you know, the only person who've held all four great offices of state in the United Kingdom in its history, and one of the last prime ministers not to have gone to university. So he's a very interesting character.
And I think we have time to ask you about the TV series you're watching. I mean, you've elected to Fauda, the Israeli series that my daughter is addicted to, a crime thriller. It's been around for a while. I think it's season four now. And is it Sauvage,
yeah, which is I found it excellent. It's just, if you like the story of the French Obama, it's obviously fiction. There's a sort of Frenchman of Arabic heritage who gets elected president, and consider everything France is going through and all the things they're struggling with in that space, and it's how his presidency unfolds. And it's a thriller, you know, it's got all the sort of thrills and spills you'd expect. It's on SBS, but I found it excellent.
Terrific. All right. Gosh, good little notes I'm taking here. Now, Helen Haynes, to you now. You started the year with quite a few books about politics, but then you switched tack. So let's go to the books you were reading, quite a few bios. One you nominated is Gloria Steinem's On the Road, and you thought this gave quite an insight into how politics gets done. Why?
Oh, hello, Geraldine, and hello to everyone. And Chris, gosh, I've just listened. I've been madly taking notes of what you've been reading, and I reckon I probably won't read any of those over summer, but I'm so going to do some homework when I get back. Look, On the Road, the Gloria Steinem book, Geraldine, for me that's about putting theory into practice. And I'm an independent, as you've pointed out, and I've come from this grassroots political movement down here in Indi that produced Cathy McGowan before me. And, you know, I think that what I read in Gloria Steinem's book just crystallised for me grassroots politics, women's circles, conversations and putting politics into context. And it was really helpful to me to read that and make some sense of what was happening in my own environment. And of course, getting that very real sense that all of this has been done before.
Women really like to know that they have, I think anyway, that's my view, that they're very much part of an ongoing story. But the book you really want to recommend isn't ostensibly about politics, though you say it touches on many issues you do care about as a Polly. It's a 2018 novel called Where the Crawdads Sing, which a lot of listeners might know about. Tell us briefly what the story is, please.
Well, Geraldine, this is a very popular book and one that had kind of passed me by. And in fact, one of my friends, we were exchanging photographs of our bedside table reading, and she looked at mine and she said, "Oh, God, you need to get something else, Helen." And I was actually in quarantine prior to going to Canberra, and it was my birthday, and in the letterbox came this book, Where the Crawdads Sing, which is by Delia Owens. And I had recalled reading Cry of the Kalahari in the 80s, which was written by Delia Owens and her husband and their experiences there. This is really a, you know, it's a very easy read. It really reads like young adult fiction. It's the story of an outsider, of a young woman who's essentially been abandoned as a little child in the marshlands of Northern Carolina. And it's her story of immense loneliness, really, and her very intense connection with nature, which, of course, is what Delia Owens can write so beautifully about. She uses that immersion in nature and her knowledge of nature to try and understand relationships. It's a story about trust. It's a story about outsiders, and ultimately it's a murder thriller. So it has a most interesting twist. And for me, I live on a billabong, and during my period of quarantine, I spent a bit of time in a kayak paddling around in that billabong, and there was a real connection to me with this story. But for me as a politician, it spoke to me of the outsider and who's not in the conversation, and it spoke to me of loneliness and what we can do as a society and this period of COVID that we've been in and through about can we potentially use this as a moment to bring more people into our society who are missing out.
Mm. Interesting. And Helen, you're a big fan of podcasts, I understand. And now of Dolly Parton, after listening to a podcast about it. What makes it so good, and what is it, by the way?
Well, in fact, I was never really into podcasts too much until I started travelling so much as a politician, and I had to ask my kids, you know, what should I be listening to? And to my amazing surprise, they said, "Oh, well, you should be listening to Dolly Parton's America." I said, "I couldn't imagine that my three kids were interested in Dolly Parton." But there you go. I listened to that, and again... There I just found this fascinating conversation, really in the midst of the culture wars of the United States, in the midst of the whole election campaign. I'm listening to Dolly Parton, and what did I hear? I heard someone who really spoke of kindness and compassion, of humility, of a Tennessee mountain home. I learned about someone who really doesn't take sides and who says things like, "No one wants to hear what I've got to think about, what I think." And it was a really fascinating introduction to me of Dolly. I'd never been a Dolly fan, but by golly, I am now. And it was a Radiolab 9-part series, so there was a lot to listen to. But I found it fascinating, and again, her extraordinary compassion and generosity, particularly post her time in the Porter Wagner show when she was really badly treated there, but she responded by amazing generosity and bailing him out. You know, I found it fascinating to listen to.
Yes, look, I've read a very interesting piece on her recently, and it did point out that if you go to a Dolly Parton concert, you get this amazing range of people there who you would think have nothing in common, you know, the great drama in America, and yet they come along to hear her. She's been married to the same man for many years. I'm inclined to say 54 years, but that doesn't sound right.
I think you're right.
Yeah, and no children. They didn't have children. So she's a very good businesswoman, and she's a very good songwriter.
All of those things. And it spoke to me of the many things I try to do as a very, very new parliamentarian and as someone who comes again from this grassroots movement in Indi, is that I think Dolly Parton is very good at finding our common ground. And I think what you've just described about the numbers of people and the types of people who come to listen to her find something that they do have in common, okay. And that begins a different kind of conversation.
So that's Dolly Parton's America. And finally, you lived in Sweden on and off, Helen, and it's left you with a love for Nordic noir.
Yes, it
good does. Luck. Good for you. I can't cope with it beyond a certain bit.
Oh, I love it.
Do
I
you?
I love it.
And you've picked a recent series called Occupied, which sounds fascinating. What can you tell us about this?
Well, I started watching Occupied in January when I was here in the grips of the worst bushfire season we've ever experienced, the nation's ever experienced, and it was so, so deeply distressing. And so many of my constituents were so terribly affected by this. We were blanketed in snow, as was in smoke, which, a little slip there, because it took me then late at night when I'd come home from that bushfire areas and I started watching Occupied, set in the snow, set in this topsy-turvy world that is Scandinavia, with the long, long summer days and the dark, dark winter nights, which was something I found fascinating when I lived there. Mm-hmm. And it was a geopolitical thriller, really, and one speaking to our times of the climate wars, okay. And Norway deciding that they would cut off the oil supply to Europe and switch completely to alternative energy sources, and this created a crisis whereby Russia does what was termed a soft invasion of Norway. So this is kind of a near future geopolitical thriller. I really recommend it.
It does sound very recommendable. Warren Ench, thank you for being so patient. Many of your picks have a common theme, I notice, Warren, and it's wild nature. And I'm going to start with a documentary you've watched a few times, David Attenborough's Life on Our Planet. You're quite an Attenborough fan, I gather.
I am, right. Look, right from his early work, I can remember as a much younger person fascinated by the amazing work that he did. And, right from his early days and his forays into Papua New Guinea, right through to what he's done more recently, which was absolutely fantastic, reflecting on his own life and the changes that have occurred during that period. And it's even more fascinating to go back to those early images, which I do remember, actually, and having a look at where we are now.
Have you seen his witness statement, like his latest one yet?
Oh, yes, twice.
Twice. That's the one you've gone back and looked at twice, I see.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. And, while it's certainly alarming, but there's also a lot of hope in it as well. And,
do you think it's him, or is it wildlife documentaries that really get you in?
Oh, look, there's no doubt about it. Wildlife documentaries has always been something that has fascinated me. I've always been almost obsessed with wildlife. Even to this day, I still breed South American macaws, have done forever. So it's a passion that I have. More recently, I was involved in establishing the National Threatened Species Institute just outside of Canberra, which I enjoy being the patron. So it's a passion that I do have, but I have to say that there is absolutely nobody at all that can do or present, if you like, the powerful statements that David Attenborough does. I have met him once, but I was absolutely in awe. I remember it vividly, but I suspect it would have been very forgettable for him when he was up here doing one of the reef series.
Yes. Oh, right. Oh, yes. And look, what a man, He was also an extremely good television executive and worked with people very well and commissioned new programs. I mean, he really is the complete individual, that man. You've been watching another series. It's a fictional one this time. It's Yellowstone, and it's set in Montana. What's it about, briefly?
Well, it's an interesting one in so much it's about, if you like, cattle barons in Montana, generational family, Kevin Costner, head of the family, and the two characters that I just absolutely love. One, of course, is Kevin Costner, but I love his daughter, Kelly Riley. I mean, she is one woman with a lot of sass.
And where do I find that? Is that Netflix or Stan or something?
It's on Stan, I believe. It's worth having a look at. I've watched every single one of the series. It's an opportunity for me, if you like, to get lost in a bit of fiction. One of the things that I tend to do, unlike my good friend Chris, I keep as far away from politics as I can when I'm on my downtime. And, I sort of learn that in the time that I'm in the Parliament. But outside of Parliament, and I guess the other thing with the Yellowstone series, it's a bit like a movie that I watched some time ago called Dances with Wolves.
Oh, yes.
It was a Kevin Costner.
Quite a while ago, Warren. That was a while ago. Now, just before I let you go, because I want to mention the book you've nominated to talk about, because I think we've got a very big bird watching and listening population, you know, bird interested population, listeners. Parrots of the World. What makes this book stand out for you?
Well, it is iconic. Now, it's one that was written by Joe Forshaw, and it is. And William Cooper is the illustrator. Now, William Cooper's from up my way, up around the Atherton Tablelands. He's sadly not with us now, but you wouldn't get a better illustrator of birds in the world. He would be up there with the best in the world. This is an iconic book. It's massive. I do actually have a personal library with a couple of thousand books in it. This is one that I can't stand up in my shelves. I have to keep it to one side. And it's a book that I often reflect and go through. It is such a amazing piece of work. It's as much a piece of art as what it is, reflective of all the every species of parrot in the world. And I'm fortunate enough to have one of the first 250 of the first edition when they put it out. It's a massive book. Lovely. I just love the pieces.
Well, look, thank you all. That's really been very interesting to hear. I have been madly writing down as well. So we must do this again. Chris Bowen, Helen Haynes and Warren Ench, thank you so much.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Good on you.
Next. Absolutely, pleasure. And please, Merry Christmas. Have a great and safe New Year. And let's look forward to a fabulous 2021 to you and your listeners. And to Chris and to Helen.
Thanks, Warren.
Chris and Warren as well. And to all those listeners,
indeed.
Happy Christmas.
Indeed.
In a bipartisan fashion to back Helen's recommendation of Occupy. That's also good.
All right, okay.
Good on you, Chris.
This has got potential. This could change politics, this pick. Thank you. It's a good start. And I really want to thank everybody for being involved.